There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, you're banned.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along on this Wednesday. And yeah, obviously, still dealing with the rain and flooding out there. I know we've expired with that. We had the National Weather Service had that tornado warning in effect, expired at 12:30. But still flooding out there. I was just talking to my friend who will join us here on the air in just a second, Erica Thomas from 1819 News. She's talking about the flooding in Baldwin County. I'm looking at the back to the Algo Cam on the causeway. It looks like I think they have both east and westbound causeway shut down. This is right there at the midway. We can get on and off the causeway onto the bayway. That's shut down. It's taken away. There goes an emergency vehicle going through it. But earlier, it was the fun of people thinking they could get their trucks through the floodwater. Watching that, it looks like a couple vehicles still stuck down there. With the wet carpeting in the car and all that kind of stuff. So this, as you look at the radar here, and we'll get more updates from Dr. Bill, but this continues. We are not through with the rain yet. Of course, we finished up with that front line, and that's of course, Mobile County, Baldwin County, dealing with it now, that front edge of it, but still rain as far back as just east of Baton Rouge, so rain's going to stick around for a while on that. And also, we'll get to your text here on the text line. So many texts from the last hour in my conversation with Mobile Police Chief Paul Prine, of course, who has said he is going to retire, but not yet, and he's been put on administrative leave by the city. So we'll continue to follow the story, and, you know, I heard Dan and Dalton talking about this morning. I'm always open to folks from the city who want to come on and talk about it and talk about both sides. That's what we do around here. But it was good to get the chief on here as well. All right. Without even further ado, it's Erica Thomas, 1819 News. Hey.
Howdy, Sean.
Howdy. So so you're in South Baldwin. Y'all are just getting what we had about an hour ago now.
Yeah, right now it's really the wind has kicked up, which the wind has been bad all morning up to now, but now it's really getting stronger, and the rain is just awful. I mean, my back patio is flooded. Had some plants that got knocked over, but really that's it. We're not having a tornado warning right now. I think there's one in Florida, you know, just over the county line, over the state line.
Well, don't go over there then.
I think we're good right now. It's just that wind. And the bad thing about it is schools around here let out at noon, so the buses are still bringing some of those kids home in the worst part of the storm.
Yeah. And listen, if I wouldn't have had the chief on in the first hour, I probably would have gone into my old man mode, or you make fun of me, my dad joke mode, and gone through the, you know, we used to have to go to school when the weather was bad, this and that, but, you know, things have changed out there. So, I think everybody, and I see a few more, like maybe around noon, some places closed, but a lot of them, like my kids didn't go to school today. A lot of them in Mobile County did not go, in Baldwin County as well. So the ones coming home, their schools didn't close in time. I don't know.
They close at the worst time. Like, okay, it's here. Let's take you home on the bus. I have a couple of friends in my subdivision that are worried sick right now because they don't want their kids to be out in it. But, you know, you got to raise them tough.
Yeah. The tornado things are different. Tornadoes and lightning, those are the real deals. The rest of it, I mean, we've just, you know, days like this, we'd play, you know, ride our bikes in the flooded streets of Mobile. But that's probably why I'm
this
strange.
This is rain and wind here. There has been some lightning, but it's not bad at all. I think that the big concern was, you know, the tornado threat. And a lot of the schools, you know, they're safer than some of the homes that these kids are going home to.
100%.
I feel like it's best to keep them in school throughout that stuff. I was raised in West Jefferson County, went to McAdory High School, and that's right next to Tuscaloosa. So as a child, we had tornado warnings all the time, and we would just get in the hallway and do our thing. We knew exactly what to do.
Well, it's probably more, and we'll get, but it's probably more about the parents having to come get, you know, or like, you know, the commuting to and from school now, but we'll see. I do have to, like, there's a stack of stories I want to ask you about, but this is the first one. When somebody asked me about this yesterday, and I was like, I know about Wynonna Judd. I didn't know about, somebody said, you know, her daughter. And I'm like, I have no idea. And I see your story here about the daughter of Wynonna Judd getting arrested up in Elmore County.
Yeah, and I didn't even know that she lived in Alabama. But
I didn't either.
According to court documents, she lived in Eufaula, and now I think she's moved closer to the Millbrook area. And looking even further into her for this story, I realized she also has a criminal history that's pretty extensive. A prison sentence for like 8 years on a drug charge, which she didn't serve that entire time. But she's been very troubled for years, and it's really sad to see somebody that had so much potential and opportunity to be in this situation. But as we all know, the mental health crisis in the United States does not discriminate, not even against, you know, people aren't safe even if your parents are famous.
Yeah, I was the Alabama angle, that's what got my attention. Do they have any kind of, like, the judge had any kind of connection to Alabama? I thought they were, you know, I knew Nashville. I don't know where they're originally from, but.
I don't know. I assume that she moved here on her own. I don't believe that Wynonna Judd has ever lived in Alabama. But I'm not an expert on that part of it. I do know that she's been here a while, I think 8 years.
And so
she lived in Tennessee before, and that's where she was sentenced to prison. So after that is when she moved to Alabama.
And you said mental health. I mean, y'all see the headline when you check out Erica's story, but she was exposing herself, right? Along
I-65. Almost like an exhibitionist kind of thing is what it sounds like in the indictment. It states that she exposed her breast and lower body at this busy intersection, which I'm assuming they meant like a ramp off I-65 in Highway 14. And it says that she did the action to arouse or gratify the sexual desire of herself. And police said she was aware of what she was doing. She knew she was doing this to cause alarm. And so that was an issue. And a really strange thing about this, with Wynonna Judd being your mom, you would think that you would probably get bailed out of anything. But she remained in jail on a $1,000 bond. She was arrested April 5th, and she's still in jail.
And she's doing, that part I didn't even think about. So I wonder if they're, now I'm projecting that they're trying to teach her a lesson or something like that, because, yeah, it'd be nothing for Wynonna to float her bail.
Yeah. Well, I think that she's probably at that point where parents really need to be, which is, I'm not going to enable you. I'm not going to bail you out. You're going to have to learn your own lessons, live your life, and get your stuff together. Wynonna Judd is very aware of mental health issues, which I am assuming this is coming from some type of mental health issue for her, whether it was caused by drugs or her drug issue was caused by mental health. But she is very aware of that. This runs in their family.
Took her grandmother.
Yes.
So a sad story out there, and we'll see what's next on that. Also, this latest story about library books that you have posted reminds me, and you know, I'd like to tell this story because when the hubbub first started around library books, to be honest with you, I'm a little bit maybe more libertine than most people that have this job I have, and I said, what are we getting? You know, I mean, y'all get over yourselves. You know, the idea that there's some library book, oh my gosh, to talk about heavy petting or, you know, the kids making out or something like that. And I thought there was much to do about nothing maybe with this. You had a story, gosh, months ago that went through and you looked at these books and you kind of quoted to me some of the stuff that was in the books. And I went, oh, okay. And then Fairhope City Council meeting over library books. This latest story here. Can you have something that's for kids that you couldn't read those words in a room of adults without people getting offended? I think that's a fair thing to ask.
Yeah, so I think I was kind of the same way at first. You know, in our job, in our business, you have to be skeptical of anything. Mm-hmm. People will cause an uprising over the smallest things. So you really have to look for yourself, and that's what I did. But these people that presented these books to the Fairhope City Council this week, they left all the research. Like, you don't have to do that anymore because it's all right here in this story on 1819news.com. You can actually read excerpts from the books that they read. It was extremely disturbing. I was sitting right behind the podium, and they live stream the meetings. And so I was aware that my face was going to be on camera. And as a journalist, I want to remain, you know, even keel. I don't want to show. And at one point, I actually had to cover my face because I was just so embarrassed for the lady that was up there reading those words.
Yeah, it's and it's not just read. I mean, I get the angle here because reading those words to say, here's what we're talking about. You know, here's what they're saying in this, and you know, the fact that it embarrassed a bunch of adults there. You know, would you think this would be right for the juvenile book section?
Right, and one of the council members, the council president Corey Martin, he literally stopped the lady because he didn't want to hear it. He did not want to hear it, and. The quote that he said is in there. I can't even read that on the radio, right. Most of this. But right. And that's another example. You know, they say this is censorship. This is violating our rights as Americans. But even on TV and radio, there's things that we can and can't do. When you're watching a movie, when you go to the theater, there's ratings on these things. And that's why it's to protect the innocence of these children. And the craziest thing about the whole argument is I really feel, after months of watching both sides and understanding both sides for the most part, you know, on both sides of the issue, I think there's some more extreme ideas. And I wouldn't necessarily personally be on board with those ideas, but at least I understand kind of where they're coming from. But I don't think that they're listening to each other. I think that they go in this with the idea that these people are just against them, and this is a fight, and they're gonna win no matter what. You know, they're gonna fight tooth and nail, and they're not backing down from their stance on these things, and they're not listening because one of the people that oppose Moms for Liberty, which is the group that wants the books relocated, not banned, actually gave a suggestion, which was the suggestion the Moms for Liberty representative had. Like, she had already talked, and she was up there, and she said, we don't want the books banned. We want them relocated to a section where children and teenagers can't just happen upon them. Right. And that was what the opposition, this 18-year-old girl that stood up and talked about her story, that was her suggestion. It was exactly the same thing. So if we just start listening to each other instead of just trying to fight all the time, I think that this issue could be halfway resolved. And it has been in other places. So I don't know why Fairhope can't come to a resolution on this, because, like I said, it's been months of back and forth.
Yeah, there's a lot to be said, not just this debate, but other debates in this country. But there's not, I guess, political capital in it. But where you go, yeah, you know what? I see this. This is a little too much. Maybe we come back here, moderate some on this. But it seems to be lost.
Yeah. I mean, it really is. And if you watch this meeting, which it was a couple of hours long, but the public comment didn't start till about 45 minutes in, I believe. And I would say it's worth for anybody to go back and watch. Just listen. Just hear them out. Both sides, just listen. Some of the people that were, you know, wanted to keep the books where they were included a licensed clinical social worker, a retired teacher, a first grade teacher that currently is an educator in Baldwin County. So you can hear them out whether you agree with what they say or not. I don't know, but I would just say listen. Know their issues, on both sides so that if you ever have this conversation or this debate or if you want to get involved, you come armed with what you need to know.
All right. And as before we wrap up today, too, this is a feel-good story and a cautionary story as well. This story about Gulf Shores Fire Chief Mark Seeley. This is a body scan program that saved his life. What, tell me the story here.
Yes, this is actually one of my favorite stories I've done recently. Mark Seeley used to be the fire chief in Mobile as well. He retired from there. But before he retired from there, he was diagnosed with kidney cancer. And thankfully, they caught it so early that he didn't have to have chemo or radiation. They just, you know, did the surgery and removed it. And it saved his life. And the reason he had that was because of this life scan that him and his wife came across at a conference in Texas. And I definitely think the story is very inspirational, but what's best is now that he's in Gulf Shores, he has brought this similar program to Gulf Shores through a company called Vital Exam. And what they do is they do a full body scan with an ultrasound. And if they see any irregularities, they'll let you know. Like, oh, you might have a spot here or there, so go check it out. You'll go to your doctor, get a CT scan like he did, and confirm or deny if something is malignant. And if it is, this program will follow you through your entire process and kind of help you and support you. And Chief Seeley said, you know, he's a man of God, and he believes that his experience, because he did survive his kidney cancer, came from God and is now being spread throughout Lower Baldwin County, because the entire city of Gulf Shores now offers these scans for free to all employees. It's mandatory for firefighters. There's been a huge increase in cancer among firefighters for obvious reasons. But he really has taken this and made it a big thing for people, and it's saving lives. In other cities and the counties are also getting on board with this, and I think it's just a great program.
Now, y'all need to check this story out. It is, and we'll probably see it coming to an area or a town near you soon, the way we're talking about this story. Erica, people want to get in touch with you. They got ideas on stories or read more of your work. First of all, talk about 1819 News and reaching out to you specifically as well.
Yeah, on 1819 News, you'll see a lot of stories that you're not going to see anywhere else. It's going to be unique perspectives in Alabama. There's going to be the stories that people are scared to touch in the news business, but we are not scared of that. We are going to tell you the truth, and if the truth hurts, you know, you need to be aware that there needs to be a change, and so that's what we're going to tell you about. If you want to get in touch with me, email news@1819news.com.
All right, Erica, as always, I appreciate it, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Thank you.
All right, there she goes, and we're coming right back. More of Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 126 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile Wednesday style. Glad to have you here. Give you a heads up too. I saw the truck, the 1-800 Got Junk truck, coming out my way out way west Mobile this morning. He's covering from way west Mobile County through Baldwin County and all in between. That's my buddy Trey with 1-800-GOT-JUNK. 16 years plus, because we're about to come up on our 15th anniversary for FM Talk 106.5 on May 1st. And I know he's doing it for a while before us. So 16, maybe 17 years for my man Trey, getting rid of junk in Mobile and Baldwin counties. It could be at your house, could be at your storage unit that you pay on every month. And you're like, I don't need that stuff, but I don't want to go get it either. Okay. He gets it. Or even big things. You have no way to move in a backyard. He does a lot of like giant trampolines, above ground pools, swing sets, storage buildings, those kind of things. Or just boxes in the house. Like if you used to have a guest room that's just now a room full of boxes you don't need, let him get those. Getting a house ready to sell, whatever. If you've got junk, you need it gone. You need 1-800-GOT-JUNK. Easy to make the appointment to online. You do it at 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com. And on the phone, the name is the number, 1-800-GOT-JUNK. And I've dealt with this recently with something for my mother. The spectrum of time stuff where they'll be there sometime between 6 in the morning and 6 in the evening, you know. That doesn't work for people with like jobs and families and life. 1-800-GOT-JUNK, they find a specific day, specific time. They set a good old-fashioned appointment. They show up. You point at the junk you want gone. They quote you a price right there on the spot. If you say yes, they get to work right then and get it done. So check them out online, 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com, or pick up the phone and call them, 1-800-GOT-JUNK. Somebody texts here that there's no way to even get into the number of texts we had from last hour for Chief Paul Prine, who was on, who, if you hadn't caught the story by now, says he is retiring. The city says he's on administrative leave. You can go back and listen to what he said about how we got here. What he has said about two top-level city officials being vindictive. He said he had filed grievances about some things he felt were unethical, and never got an answer one way or another. That's why I kept asking, you know, did they come back and say, no, you misunderstood, or yes, you're right. He said there was no answer on that. And how much of this is involved with what's coming out with the Kenyon Brown report that the city paid to have done, that third-party report. So there's still so many questions in this. I think this is early on. We'll try to get everybody who has a say-so in this on the air over the next week or so, I hope, and get their voices on here and continue to talk with you about it at 343-0106. All right. Baldwin County, you're still getting the bulk of this, the front line. The front line of this front, right, where the worst of it is just trying to make its way just into Florida now, making its way into northwest Florida. Mobile County, though, and the rest of Baldwin County, still we got rain with us for a while. More from Dr. Bill and his forecast coming up in just minutes. Plus, when we come back, I'll be joined by Dr. Rick Wallace. We'll talk some Jubilees a lot more when we return.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
Right, 1:35, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here on this Wednesday. Check in with my buddy David McCrary at LCM Motor Cars, where all the vehicles got a free wash down today. That's nice.
No doubt. We needed it. The concrete company next door to me sends all their dust over there, and they won't come pick it up.
But now it's washed away. Good.
We got there this morning, Sean, and we was kind of watching the weather, trying to figure out what to do. And we sold a truck, so we closed at 1 o'clock, and everybody's going home trying to be safe. And so we'll be back tomorrow at 8 o'clock, 8 to 6, Thursday and Friday, and 9 to 2 on Saturday. Hope everybody stays safe out there. We got a real good inventory. We've already booked a trip to go down and try to buy some more cars next week. So, I mean, it'd be nice to go down there and buy 20-25 vehicles and bring them back. But what we still have is nice and then inspected and ready to go.
Okay. This is a great time for you to plug the website.
LCM Motor Cars website. Even today, I should have pictures on my cell phone, so you can text me straight from the website. And if there's not a picture on the website, I can send you one, hopefully.
All right, good stuff. Y'all check it out, and yeah, we'll talk to you again later this week.
Will do. And Sean, I'd like to say happy anniversary to my wife. 25 years with Miss Jennifer McCrary today. So
wow.
And as we all know, that's not an easy thing in today's world.
So, no, it's like dog years actually to be married to you. So it's 25 equals 25 plus 7. So, I mean, times 7. So there you go. Do the equations, yeah. Y'all. She's a patient
easy,
woman.
She's easy to be married to. I'm the tough one.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, you're. That's what I'm on her side. Trust me, David. I'm on her side. Thank you, man. We'll talk soon.
Talk to you Friday.
All right. There we go. There goes David McCrary from LCM Motor Cars. And we'll continue the conversation. By the way, there's, I guess, some stories up about the conversation we had earlier with Chief Prine. We'll look at those and maybe talk about those on tomorrow's show. This is too much fun here, even in the midst of all this, to get to talk about Jubilees and a lot more, to get Dr. Rick Wallace in studio with us to talk about it. Thanks for coming in.
Glad to be here, Sean.
This is so you have been, because you and I were emailing back and forth. You've been in our area. You got your PhD at Auburn.
Yes,
but it sounds like you're not from Alabama originally. And get you closer to that mic too.
I'm from Ohio.
Okay, but you decided to, after getting your PhD at Auburn, to stick around down here.
Yeah, they offered me a job, so I
they made you an offer you couldn't refuse, like a job.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what is your PhD? What's your study in?
Well, I started out in marine science and in Puerto Rico, and then came to Auburn and got a PhD in fisheries.
Okay.
Fisheries management.
So, so that is like, give me just like a, the layman's version difference between marine science and fisheries. What is the specialty difference?
Yeah, marine science is more general.
Okay.
You could, and within that, you might study all kinds of different things. You could be a marine chemist, a marine geologist.
Okay.
A coral specialist.
Okay.
A fishery biologist.
Okay, so they're under that umbrella.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
So fisheries biologist, but you also spend a lot of time studying bivalves, oysters
yes.
specifically,
yes.
right?
Yes, well, yeah, like a lot of people, I had a twisted path.
Okay.
And I really started out a hard fish guy. And mm-hmm. when I got here, I just things evolved. And I ended up being a lot more involved with shrimp and oysters and crabs and really more oysters at the end.
Where do you think we are from? When did you start looking at the oysters in our area?
Oh, probably in the late 80s.
Okay. So late 80s to now, how are we doing?
It hasn't been good.
Yeah.
We had as many as 2 million pounds of oysters landed in Alabama in some years, and you know it got into the tens of thousands. But I should also add that it's been cyclical too. We would have years of drought, which would drive the population down, plus maybe a little over harvesting, and then the conditions would get better, and it would come back. Maybe not to the 2 million pounds, but to 1 million pounds or. Mm-hmm. 800,000 pounds. But then my understanding is, and I've lost touch a little bit, but we really went down a number of years ago, and it's just recovering now from some good management and some good luck with the environmental conditions.
Right, because that's the other thing, is you've got two parts of it, and you know, doing the management, doing hard surfaces for the spat to land on, and all that is great. But you've got this Goldilocks zone of brackish water, right? These oysters are kind of a little bit Goldilocks. It can't be too fresh. It can't be too salty.
Well, yeah, actually,
to be just right.
Oysters can't move.
Yeah.
I think you've probably noticed
that.
I have. But they actually have a tremendous tolerance for fresh and salt water. But there's limits.
Right.
And because they do live in this zone that fluctuates a lot. But if it's too fresh for too long, they die.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's too salty, they don't die. They like it. It's just fine.
Yeah, but other critters come in. Yeah.
But the famous oyster drill comes and eats them all.
So, I mean, and we talk about oyster drills a lot. So that amount of fresh water, whatever parts, per billion that is, it keeps the oyster drills at bay, right?
It's
like a force field against them.
Yeah. And when it gets above about 15 to 20, the oyster drills start coming back in. It's not like all at once.
Sure.
I mean, it takes a while to find the oysters and for their populations to build back up. But the freshwater, a good freshet pushes them out. And
it's a really interesting system, right?
Is.
I mean, that here's this freshwater coming in that could eventually, I mean, if it was sustained, kill the oysters, but the right amount of it pushes their enemy away or their predator away, and they keep going.
Yeah, we had an interesting experience with that. We had a little study going looking at oyster diseases, and this student had all these oysters out in Dauphin Island Bay and around there, and everything's going fine, and all of a sudden, not all of a sudden, but a drought kind of kicks in, and it mm-hmm. gets saltier and saltier, and all of a sudden, all the oysters we have out for this disease study are gone it was clear they were eaten by oyster drills.
Right.
It was one of those really bad years for oyster drills.
And so, I just wonder if we can, there's more attention, I think, now than there would have been in the 80s to oyster management. Is that fair, do you think?
It was pretty crazy back then. If you got some of the old MRD guys on here,
right.
there was a lot going on. Always with oystermen.
But I just wonder if, like, this recovery, because there's this part of it, like you said, that nature. I mean, it's either going to be, it's the conditions of the bay. But are we doing the things to ensure going forward that we have enough extra, that if we have one of these years where the oyster drills really hit them or something like that, that we can come back from it more quickly, That's,
yeah,
I guess, what I'm getting at.
I'm not up to date on the most recent thing, but it looks to me like they're managing it a lot more than they used to. It used to just be open.
Mm-hmm. And now they have zones.
Except in the health department would close it.
Right.
And that was about it. And if it got fished down, it got fished down. And it was also thought because of the way it's managed with just tonguing only,
mm-hmm.
and that it would be hard to really overfish it, that when it got down to a certain point, people would just stop.
Yeah, because we don't oyster dredge here.
Right, yeah. And it's not as hard on the reef when they do it by hand tonguing.
And we can, you know, can talk oysters for an hour as well, but something that, and you handed me, this is so very interesting to me. This is a document, and I got a document of yours. This was published back in 1973. I was one when this came out. I'm so excited to have it in my hand. And this is extensive oxygen depletion in Mobile Bay, Alabama. Dr. Wallace, what is this all about?
Well, when I came here in 83, someone told me about this phenomena called the Jubilee. I had no clue about it, and I thought, well, and I was tasked with, we were supposed to write informational pamphlets and newspaper articles and these kinds of things. So I thought that'd be a pretty good thing to write about, because a lot of people talk about it, but they don't understand maybe the science behind it. And so I came across that little paper, which was written 13 years before I got here. And
it's incredible. And I mean, the maps in here, I've just now started to look through this by Edwin May.
Spent a year or 2 years measuring the oxygen in Mobile Bay, and that was a lot of work back then. And he really nailed it down to the extent of the low oxygen in the bay, which of course is what drives the Jubilee. And
it's the catalyst, but explain on how that works, because you know, growing up here, you know, all right, we're looking for this conditions, and they had a thunderstorm, and you know, we're gonna have the wind out of this direction. That means there's a chance there's gonna be a Jubilee, the bells will be ringing. But what is actually happening with that? What I mean, we know it's low oxygen, but why is it wind from a certain direction? Why is it the thunderstorm in the evening? Those things.
Well, the first thing is stratification. We've got this situation where there's a tremendous amount of freshwater inflow, even in the summer, even in a summer drought. Mm-hmm. You know what the delta looks like.
And yes.
All that's coming in the bay, and all that freshwater, particularly in the summer, is rolling over the top of salt water. So you've got stratification. I'm talking with my hands here.
I'm following.
And the
salt water's lower, fresh water's higher.
Salt water's lower, fresh water's on top. And that tends to isolate the water on the bottom from the surface.
Okay.
So if there's not a lot of wind or anything, then you don't get mixing. And so that bottom water, the processes on the bottom, both biological and chemical, use up the oxygen in the bottom. And it's not replenished from the surface because there's no wave action or anything. And so
that layer of fresh water is somehow, if it's still and not agitated, it blocks the oxygenation from getting, I mean, is there any oxygen, is it depleted in the fresh as well, or somehow the fresh doesn't transfer
in the surface, you've got the chlorophyll going on.
As far as the sun gets down.
Yeah. So it's producing oxygen as would be expected, but it's isolated. The oxygen doesn't get down to the bottom, and at the same time, the bottom is consuming all the oxygen without replenishing.
And so that starts the clock ticking, right?
And actually, according to May and other studies, there's actually large areas of low oxygen offshore in the bay for sometimes long periods of time. It's not like this just happens in a day or two. The low oxygen is there, but you need the rest of it.
Right, and that's why the direction of wind is important.
And the other thing that's sometimes overlooked that this fellow mentions is the high cliffs on the eastern shore.
Old Ecor Rouge, huh?
Yes, because when the wind blows from the east, those cliffs protect the nearshore waters from any ruffling or any mixing.
Right.
And so that water, it blows the water to the west. You know all this part of it. It blows the waters to the west, and there's a return on the bottom. But those high cliffs, protect the eastern shore from any wave action or anything. And that's a big part of it, they think.
Yeah. Okay. So, Dr. Wallace, if we took the bluffs out, we took Ecor Rouge out, right? Would we still have Jubilees?
I can't say that, but
because there's only two places in the world that happened, right?
Yeah.
Do they have a similar geography? Was it Bay of Bengal or somewhere?
It's funny because I just was reviewing all this stuff and thinking about it after a long time of not thinking about it. But there's very few reports of Jubilees down in Bon Secours Bay, and there's no there's no cliffs there. There's no bluffs
right
there. Now, certainly there's low oxygen down there.
Sure, but what's different, maybe?
Is and there's not many people down there to report, so it's...
True, but there are more people than there used to be. And we come back from this, though. I mean, I was wondering, isn't there... It's in India or somewhere. There's another place in the world that has a Jubilee.
What I recall was there was a bay in Japan.
Japan, maybe.
But
okay.
I never could. I tried to find out more information about that years ago, and I never could. I never could.
Right, coming right back with Dr. Rick Wallace right here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right to 152, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along here. And Dr. Rick Wallace, our guest. We have just a few minutes left here, but like Don asked this question, you and I talked about a little bit during the break. Is a Jubilee similar to a turnover in a pond? And you're talking about up north. Don's originally from Michigan, so so he's talking about, is that a similar process?
Well, yeah, you could think of it that way. There's stratification in those ponds. That's usually a temperature stratification. And
cold water down at the bottom of the lake.
Cold water at the bottom, warm water at the top. And then in the winter up there, they literally turn over. The water on top cools and goes to the bottom.
And then you have one area of water has more oxygen than the other, right?
Yeah.
That's what happens here, that these fish are along, they're along, let's say, the eastern shore, although people are saying they've seen them at Weeks Bay. I told you that I've seen what I call a low oxygen event. I don't know if you call it Jubilee, on the western shore of the bay. But somehow this area of low oxygen water is getting moved into an area that previously had oxygen, right?
Right. And it pushes the fish. The fish are trying to escape it. And if they're a bottom-dwelling fish, there's not much choice but to head towards shore. And in the case of crabs, you know, they can get out of the water almost and mm-hmm. Find some oxygen. And that's why you see the flounders right up on the very edge, hoping that, you know, there's probably a little more oxygen right in that thin...
Right, because there might be some kind of wave action there.
Right, yeah, and the water is so shallow there that they might be getting... oxygen could be flowing in from the atmosphere. So.
And then the sun comes up, Dr. Wallace, and something changes.
Yeah, and I'm not sure what it has to do with the sun, but it's usually the tide change.
But it seems to me like there'll be a Jubilee, and you have a little bit of time there in the morning, and then as the sun gets up, it's... You know, and this is anecdotal. I'm not a scientist, so.
No, and that's an interesting point, and everybody says that. But I can't imagine that the oxygen conditions change so fast just because the sun came up, because all that chlorophyll has to still produce.
Yeah, how long
the
does it take before the sun gets the chlorophyll produces the oxygen, and that oxygen gets absorbed into the water and then gets into the gills of a fish?
Yeah, it's mostly it's usually the tide change, I think, that really helps it.
It depends on where we are in the cycle, but quite often that lines up. You know, we've got some movement at dawn.
Yeah, and there just may be other factors associated with the sunrise that, who knows?
I mean, this is a thing that this is part of our culture here, and studying for, you know, our great marine research that goes on here in South Alabama. But this is like if you're not told people in Oklahoma about this, they'd think we're lying to them. Right.
Yeah, absolutely. It's amazing, and people have asked me about this in my travels and everything, and it's hard to explain.
You know, I'm looking through this book that you've this paper written by Edwin May, 1973, and I mean I will delve into this tonight, but it's, I mean, he was listening, just like he said. Well, in 1954 was a year with no Jubilees, but all the others had at least five, average of five per year, maximum of 15. I mean, this is well researched here. This is and this is back in the 70s. So I wonder if we could take that as a baseline. Are we tracking the same way for Jubilees now that we were then?
Yeah, well, I don't think anybody's keeping track. And that was all based on newspaper reports. So who knows how accurate it was. But apparently the Press Register was pretty faithful at recording Jubilees, particularly in the 50s and the 60s. And in those years. So he went by that. And interestingly, I think the first report was 1867, not from the Press Register, but from whatever the paper was at that time. And I think he had evidence of reports going back to 1812.
Wow.
I'm not sure about that.
And Lord knows what folks thought about it early on when it happened, other than it's dinner time.
Well, interestingly, it wasn't called Jubilee till the 1900s.
What? Did they even have a name for it? Or?
Yeah, it was just...
The thing that happened?
That thing that happened. That thing that brought us free fish.
Yeah, which is a great thing. You said, you know, we started off talking about oysters. Before we wrap up here, you want to bring this back to oysters and how this affects oysters.
Yeah, because of this low oxygen all along the eastern shore, you know, there's no oyster reefs, live oyster reefs, left anymore on the eastern shore.
And right. Got the old oysters out there.
Yeah, there's old shell bottoms and places where people still fish, but... it's not certain, but certainly this low oxygen had something to do with that. And I can give you a little quick testimony of that. We had a study at Fish River Reef going, and we had oysters that we put there on the bottom, and we were also monitoring the spat set. And we saw a spat set, and we saw our oysters growing just fine. We also had an oxygen meter out there, a continuous recording oxygen meter, and we recorded 4 or 5 straight days of no oxygen, all the oysters died, the ones that we put out and the ones that we had seen set naturally. So the oysters sometimes set on these reefs, but these sporadic, periodic low oxygens pretty much keeps those reefs from developing.
This is fascinating stuff and just a continuing discussion. I appreciate you coming in, and I really appreciate this extensive oxygen depletion in Mobile Bay, Alabama by Edwin May document. This is something.
Thank you for having me, Sean.
Hey, thanks for coming in. All right, we're out of here. Feinbaum on the way next. We'll talk to you tomorrow. And reminder, too, Friday on the road at Mahindra Tractor with the show. We'll talk more about that tomorrow.